I'm Dennis O'Hare.
And I'm Rose Scott. Dennis, as you know, you're a reporter here. In the early 90s, the East Lake neighborhood, well, it was called an urban nightmare, nicknamed Little Vietnam. At the core of this was the East Lake Meadows housing projects. Poverty, high unemployment, and crime blanketed the community. In fact, the crime rate was 18 times the national average. Take a listen to this.
Robbery, prostitution, killing.
Poverty, the shootings, the drug abuse.
Two guys got in a fight right across in front of my house. I saw one peep his head around the corner. Pow, pow, pow. It was just like you was in a movie, Western movie.
Eva Davis moved into Atlanta's East Lake Meadows housing project in 1971. It wasn't long before murder and mayhem became a way of life.
He ran right by my car and blood was just shooting out of his body. That guy shot him and he fell dead right before my face.
That is longtime resident Eva Davis in an interview from a news report on East Lake. The East Lake Meadows housing project is now long gone and has been replaced with mixed income housing, a charter school, and a crime rate that's nowhere near what it was in the early 90s.
And Dennis, East Lake has become the model for what they say is a template for neighborhood revitalization. Atlanta-based purpose-built communities is using that model to end what they say poverty and rebuild areas plagued by the social and economic ills. David Edwards is CEO of Purpose Built Communities, Atlanta-based Purpose Built Communities, and he joins us now in studio. David, thanks for coming in. We appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
The core of the mission of Purpose Built Communities, and I gave a little bit of it, but sort of in detail, talk about what really is sort of the, what is a model? What is a purpose-built model?
Well, we have a model that we're now implementing around the country that has really five major components. The first is a very defined neighborhood. We focus on highly distressed neighborhoods, just like East Lake was. The second is we look for community leadership, local community leadership, almost always private leadership, to take on the revitalization of these communities. And the combination of those two with three programmatic investments, one around mixed income housing, one about cradle to college education, and a third around community wellness programs, which could be workforce development, community health. Those five components are our model, and that's what we do around the country.
East Lake is unique because you also had a man like Tom Cousins to help spearhead the transformation, and that's great. Not every neighborhood will have someone like that. So where do you begin? You talk about all these partners and stakeholders. Where do you begin? Do you go out and try to find a Tom Cousins for every neighborhood that needs to be sort of redeveloped?
Well, the good news is that the folks find us. So almost every city in the country has folks like Tom Cousins who are interested in revitalizing these neighborhoods. And they call us in, and we're a consulting firm. So what we do is we introduce them to our model, and we support them through a process. And it could be a philanthropist or it could be a foundation. And it's their responsibility for help pull together the ecosystem of partners that really make this model work.
East Lake had a number of other unique things going for it. It had the golf course there, which was not just a golf course. It was a Bobby Jones golf course, design golf course. So it had that kind of history that would draw some of those investors, some of those angels that we talked about, including Tom Cousins. It also has around it a community that's that has some money, that's not gated off, that has a stake in the... It had a lot of sort of bare-bones assets that could be drawn together once a galvanizing force came out. Can you replicate that everywhere else, though? Because as Rose mentioned, East Lake had some stuff that a lot of other distressed communities really don't, which is why they're distressed in the first place.
Well, it's important to remember that when East Lake began this effort, the golf course you're talking about was about to be turned into a junkyard.
Yep.
It was so it was not an asset that was really drawing folks to the neighborhood. And the surrounding area was in deep distress as well. In fact, there had not been a building permit issued in the East Lake neighborhood for 20 years prior to this investment that was made in the mid-90s. So while there was the potential to bring folks into that neighborhood, it still was highly distressed. And in fact, it was probably the most distressed neighborhood in Atlanta at the time. When we go around the country, we do the same thing. We find all neighborhoods have some assets. They could have a history. They could have public assets like parks, riverfront properties. Almost all these neighborhoods have something going for them. You just have to find them and leverage them as you go through this process.
And the people in the community, they don't want to leave. They feel this is home. It is home. So then when you have people coming in from the outside saying, okay, we're going to put in mixed income housing, on the one hand, folks are going to want the improvements. On the other hand, they're going to ask, can I still afford to live here? Is this still going to be my community?
Well, it's really important, in fact, to engage the local community in this process. A part of our model is, in fact, to do intensive conversations and involvement of the local community, because they're the ones that end up driving this, and you have to have them not only buying into the vision, but willing to participate in its implementation. But the other thing to remember is that in these distressed neighborhoods, you have transiency rates of 30 to 40%. So a lot of these neighborhoods, they're on average turning over every 3 or 4 years. So part of this is actually to stabilize the neighborhood, to make it a place where folks want to stay and invest.
Eastlake had a housing project, obviously in Eastlake Meadows, which I think there was some report that said it was the most dangerous neighborhood in the nation. So then where do you start? Because now you're talking about criminal activity. Do you then start the conversation with local authorities? We know about the Red Dog unit. You have to remove the bad element first, as well. I'm thinking, David, is that where you start? Because let's just look, 9 out of 10 people have been a victim of a violent crime. You have to start there and removing. And how challenging is that? You have to go in and talk to authorities and say, we need your help in this.
Well, what's interesting about this is that is usually the place where people start. It's the point they make is people will not invest in a community that has high crime. What our model involves is an investment at scale. So bringing in a large number of new housing units, a high-quality created a college education pipeline, other sets of services that will have a significant impact very quickly on these neighborhoods. And what we have found is that the crime goes down as a consequence of those investments, not because you've been able to send a lot of police into those neighborhoods to control crime.
But people that live in distressed areas and where you have high crime, they want to see something done. That has to be immediate. So, Mike, again, if you are working with authorities and making sure that it's removed first, is that where you begin? Because, look, Eastlake was a very bad place to live. In that clip we heard Mayor Franklin, then Atlanta Mayor Charlie Franklin, said, I don't even go to Eastlake.
That's right. Well, in fact, if you look at the Eastlake experience, what really changed the trajectory in terms of public safety was the tearing down of the Eastlake Meadows housing complex and putting up that mixed-income housing. If you look at the numbers, that's when everything turned. So sometimes you've got to go in and make those kinds of investments to pull down those centers of crime so that other folks will now come and invest in that neighborhood and help you drive towards the progress you're trying to get.
And then how challenging is it then to also reassure the people that are staying, those residents, that look, this is not just about displacing you at all. You remember you talked about conversations. Sounds like there has to be an ongoing conversation with these purpose-built communities to make sure the residents know they will not be displaced, or, you know, because often when you hear economic redevelopment, for some can be defined as gentrification for somebody else. So how important is making sure they have your support, that you're not going to displace people?
Well, that's central to all of this. And the whole point of this effort is to give people a place to live who are there now. So in the case of Eastlake, for example, there were 2 years' worth of conversations with the community residents there, and they helped design and agreed to the redevelopment, and all of them were given the first right to come back to that community after it was constructed.
In that process, though, since some of the folks who are in the community may have a record with the police, as Rose was talking about, is there any kind of a decision made about, okay, if somebody has a record, does he or she get to stay?
Well, now you're really just talking about this specific instance of when you're replacing public housing complex, and that's not always what we do. But in the case where you have public housing complexes that you're actually swapping out with mixed income communities, mm-hmm. you got to look at those rules and regulations. The fact is that those are already in place. These aren't new rules. They're just being enforced in a way to protect the residents that want to come back to these communities.
As for return on investment then, when you attract folks, and Rose mentioned Tom Cousins, who was sort of instrumental in Eastlake, but whoever it is in whatever community, do you promise them anything? Is there something that they want in return, or is the return simply to have a community where people might buy their house that they built or whatever it happens to be?
Well, if you look at the impact these communities have on the local cities and the community and the whole entire community that within which these neighborhoods reside, it's a huge amount of benefit. I mean, you're talking about reductions in crime that occur all over the city. You're talking about reductions in police expenses, educational expenses. So the benefits of transforming these neighborhoods accrue to the entire city, which is why there's such a compelling business case for this work.
I recently understand that Oakland, you've now sort of focused on an area in Oakland, California. How much of it do you use Eastlake, that model, when they come to you, or if you go out there, do you say, hey, look, we need to bring you here. You need to see what, maybe not the exact, you know, same, you know, development, because I don't know if this place has a golf course, but how instrumental is Eastlake in sort of, I guess, getting people on board and saying, this is where you all can, this can be the end result?
Well, the experience of Eastlake is really important, but we have now lots of other communities where we're working that provides a similar kind of experience for folks to see. So if you look at our work in Charlotte and in Birmingham and in New Orleans and Indianapolis, folks can see what these kinds of investments can yield. So Eastlake is obviously an important case for us, but we have now others that we can point to.
Funding. You said you have partners that come to you. Are you able to sort of give a number of just how much money you all have been able to put into these communities, whether it's from other sources? I mean, you keep a running tally here since you've all been around?
Yeah, well, our investment is our consulting services. So we're free, which is what, and we have three very generous funders who will allow us to do that. So the good news is that we don't have to charge anyone for our services. But really, the resources to transform these neighborhoods are all generated locally. In fact, most of those dollars are already being spent in these neighborhoods, and all we're doing is getting them to work collaboratively together towards a single vision.
In terms of the government, then, because these communities are part of larger ones, do you need buy-in from the local civil authorities and or the politicians in the area? And then how do you get them to buy into that model?
In most cases, the local government is a partner. They're part of the ecosystem. They may not be leading the effort, mm-hmm. but we do need their help on things like zoning and in the school system, potentially. We need their help in helping us get schools transformed. So they're always a partner in the process, but I wouldn't say they generally lead the effort. It's almost always privately led.
Have you had any examples where there's been, I mean, and obviously Atlanta was one where Eastlake, to come back to it, was successful, but have you had any examples where you found, okay, it's hard to coordinate the investors, the community, and the government? They might be at cross purposes.
Yeah, I mean, we have to make sure the conditions are ripe for success. And so what we do is we spend 6 months to a year just talking with folks and the partners and making sure that they're aligned and that they're willing to go forward. And it's really only then that we move forward in what we would call a purpose-built community project. Hmm.
What's the timeline for saying, okay, this is not only a success in the short term, but in the long term? Is there a point at which you say, okay, this is going to last for generations?
So, you know, these communities did not get into the state they're in overnight. Mm-hmm. And so we take the long-term view of this. And I would argue that it's going to take you 5 years from this time you think about starting a project like this until you start really seeing the kind of results that you see at Eastlake. Sometimes it'll be a little longer. Sometimes it'll be a little shorter. And it really depends on how quickly the local community can move and what kind of impact you have on the neighborhood as you go forward.
And when you mention that 5 years, that can really, almost like, you know, sticker shock. I can imagine for some residents, it's like, well, 5 years? It takes 2 years for the conversation. But I imagine that's to make sure you ensure you have the right development, because each city will be different. So you guys come in as consultants. Okay, you recently brought in Oakland. You go in. What's the first thing you do? Do you survey the neighborhood? What do you do? Do you just listen to them? How do you begin to tell them what the next step is?
Well, once we've got a partner, a local leader, we put together a plan with them, and that plan is based on an assessment of the neighborhood. What are the assets? What are the deficits? How does our model apply? Can we bring the partners in to deliver that model? And that's what takes that first 6 to 12 months to get done.
And Eastlake also, with the charter school that they have there, with Drew Charter School, and then the high school that's coming on board, how important is education? You mentioned the cradle to college, so is that also, and is that a staple of all the communities here, making sure there's a school in there somewhere?
A high quality, you know, cradle to college pipeline is central to this effort. In fact, what we're trying to do is make these neighborhoods education destinations where people want to move in and put their kids in the school system. So it's critically important to the model. About half of our communities are charter schools, about half are traditional schools. And so we're increasingly confident that we can build those pipelines regardless of the sort of governance structure involved.
And real quickly, you mentioned health services, and unfortunately we're real short of time here, but with community health, does it have to have a facility or something in place that people can go to right there? Or is it something that just depends on each individual community as to how that will show up?
Well, we have a bias towards capital investments because we think that really helps change the trajectory of a neighborhood. So if it's a health clinic or it could be YMCA, those kinds of facilities are always very helpful to have. But at the end of the day, there are a lot of service providers who work in these neighborhoods. So getting them to collaborate with this effort is just as important.
David, real quick, have you ever had a conversation with the community where you thought maybe it would seem impossible, or every community that you've all have addressed, you've been a consultant for, it has something has come out of it? I'm just curious.
No, that happens quite a bit. Folks will call us up and say, we think we have an opportunity here, and we'll start talking with them, and it'll be quickly become apparent that it's not going to necessarily apply in their case. So that, it's not unusual for that to happen. But for the most part, we've been able to find ways to make the model work.
Well, it's been great to have you, and best of luck in the Oakland project. David Edwards is CEO of Purpose Built Communities. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Hey, my pleasure.
We'll continue to check with you.
Thank you,
fantastic.
David.
Thank you.